Hey, Fidelity, how can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome inside the clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, broadcasting live through the Hyundai Score Studios on the first official weekend of baseball's offseason, which really began Friday with White Sox GM Rick Hahn finally speaking to the assembled media, and the Cubs making a sneaky good move and claiming Wade Miley off waivers. Now we can have some fun debating which development was bigger. Bruce, good morning.
Good morning, David. Yeah, it was a very active day for Chicago baseball after a couple weeks hiatus from being around since the White Sox were eliminated from the playoffs in early October. But it's either way, because the Miley news is, as you put it so well, David, sneaky and at the same time a stealth move to fortify a pitching staff that needs to be rebuilt going toward 2022. And imagine starting with the White Sox and Rick Hahn and some comments, and in particular maybe about Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, I think either way, you know, you look at Miley and you wonder what that says about the direction this team is going in terms of competing in 2022. You look at what Rick Hahn had to say overall by not being satisfied. We'll get to some of those specifics, but I think that it's interesting to hear what the Chicago baseball fan thinks. 312-644-6767. You know how to reach us. A lot of you love to text us. You can call us too. You can argue with Bruce. You can tell him he's wrong. You can argue with me. You can disagree with me, however you want to. We have a big show today. We have, obviously, Cubs and Sox talk this hour. We have our segment, Chicago Bound, at the end of the hour. And then next hour at 10 o'clock, Jim Callis. And Brennan Davis, the Minor League Baseball Player of the Year for the Cubs, will join us at 10:30. Lots of conversation in between, Bruce. But you mentioned Rick Hahn, and you mentioned his comment on Carlos Rodon. Do you think that was the most significant thing to come out of Friday's news conference, what he had to say about the lefty for the White Sox?
Yes, David, I think that's the news in waiting. Here's how it works. By Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern time, Major League Baseball teams must offer a qualifying offer to their existing free agents, guys, free agents that have been with their team for at least the whole season. You have had to be there for the whole year. So guys like Baez and Bryant and Rizzo, having been traded during this last season, will not be able to get a qualifying offer from their teams. Therefore, they're straight-out free agents. But in the case of Carlos Rodon, who was with the White Sox all year, the White Sox have the opportunity to give them to give him a qualifying offer. A qualifying offer means that you are basically offering an $18.4 million contract to that particular player for 2022, and if he turns it down as a free agent, then you get a compensatory draft pick in the amateur draft coming up away from the team that signs him. So from all of that, we will find out at 4 o'clock on Sunday if Carlos Rodon is offered a qualifying offer of $18.4 million. Keep in mind, he made $3 million last year after being non-tendered from a $4.5 million deal that he would have gotten through arbitration. And that would be, even CPS, you know, where I went proudly to school, figures that that would be about six times the amount of money that he made this year. If he sees that and decides whether to go full-blown free agent or take the qualifying offer.
That's a pretty good raise, Bruce. And Rick Hahn is limited in what he can say about Carlos Rodon because he is a free agent, but this was the way that Rick Hahn worded it yesterday.
Carlos, as a free agent, there's only so much that I'm allowed to say, but I can certainly praise how fantastic he was for us over the bulk of the season and to figure out a way to bring him back in some capacity. Obviously, this isn't our first foray into free agency with Carlos. We had this same or similar situation, at least in terms of his right, last offseason when we had an interest in bringing him back and was able to work it out then as well. So we'll see how the market unfolds. Obviously, he's coming from a much better position, which we all benefited from over the course of the 21 season. And, you know, on a personal level, it's just it was great to see a kid who had been through a lot and had a lot of adversity fulfill the promise that our scouts and player development people all saw for him back when we drafted him out of NC State. So from that standpoint, it's a bittersweet day because he met that potential and now obviously he has the benefit of exploring his free agent options.
Rick Hahn on Friday, Bruce, I have a question for you. Obviously, you're reporting that the Sox are unlikely to make the qualifying offer to Carlos Rodon. You mentioned the raise that a qualifying offer would represent. We also know that Scott Boras, who represents Carlos Rodon, has his sights set on a bigger, larger, richer contract. Do you think Carlos Rodon, on any level, personally, will be disappointed if the White Sox don't offer him a qualifying offer?
Gee, that's a great question. And I really don't know that answer, but I will say that having ended up the season with a sore shoulder again, after having had Tommy John surgery, after having had shoulder surgery, after having been hurt, frankly, every year since 2015, I would say he'd be very tempted in staying with a team that's been with him side by side, been with trainers that have been with him side by side, been with medical people that have been with him side by side throughout his career, and making $18 million and being able to be a free agent again at age 29 next year. So all directions point to the White Sox not offering that kind of money right now because if they want to bring him back, David, you know, they might be able to get him on a two-year deal for $20 million or a one-year deal with an option for 2023 for $20 million. So the math just doesn't add up to them offering the qualifying offer because they can still offer him anything they want after that. If he wants to come back, he's free to come back.
Well, Bruce, the math also makes me wonder if it adds up with the rotation because typically, and I don't know what is typical anymore with Major League Baseball and their starting pitchers and the definition of what a starting pitcher is, but you have a five-man rotation. And yesterday, we heard from Rick Hahn as well that the White Sox plan with Michael Kopech is that he will be leaving the bullpen or arm barn. He will be leaving the arm barn, and he will be entering the rotation. That's six if you have plans to bring back Carlos Rodon, as we just described. So I don't know. Maybe you do. I don't know if they really are in a position where they're counting on Carlos Rodon being part of this rotation in 2022.
I think they would really like to have him back. I think they'd probably like to have him back more on their own terms. And by own terms, I mean a short-term deal that makes sense for Rodon? Again, David, let's just go through it. Would a one-year $12 million deal with an option, a mutual option, or two mutual options to make a lot more, make the most sense for Rodon and the Chicago White Sox?
Yes. Yes. I think 100 times yes, because I think that even though I posed that scenario, Dallas Keuchel is one of those five, and I don't know where Dallas Keuchel fits into this team's future, short or long term, and that's why I think we heard from Rick Hahn yesterday on Friday, and to me this was as significant as anything that he said when he talked about how to use Michael Kopech moving forward.
It's the innings base, and what can we reasonably to him over the course of ideally 7 months next year. We're going to have to be diligent in our monitoring of him over the course of the offseason, as well as it goes through spring training and over the course of the regular season in terms of his how the ball looks coming out of his hand, what his mechanics look like, what the data is telling us, what almost as important as anything or more important than anything, how Michael's reporting how he feels. You're absolutely right. The kid has a world of talent. We think he's going to be a potentially dominant starter for a long time, but we are dealing with a limiting space, and we need to build it up wisely. I'm probably going to be sitting in this chair at some point next summer explaining why we're doing something with Michael in terms of giving him a break in order to keep him strong over the course of that season. So it's nothing that we haven't dealt with before in terms of building a guy out of the pen into the rotation, but it's certainly a project that we need to go into with eyes open and a good and one that has some flexibility built into it based upon what we're all seeing and what Michael's reporting come next spring and summer.
Bruce, are they leaning this direction because this is what's best for the White Sox, or is this because what Michael Kopech wants?
It's best for the White Sox and Michael Kopech because, David, you go back to, 2 years ago. He didn't pitch in 2019. He was recovering from Tommy John. He didn't pitch in 2020. He opted out. So there's 2 years in a row where he didn't pitch at all. He came back last year through 40 to 50 innings, out of the bullpen and some spot starts, where he went three or four innings tops. That tells you that coming back as a rotation pitcher next year, he's not ready to make the jump up to 140 or 150 innings from where he's at right now. Therefore, what Hahn said in that press conference is, you people are going to be questioning us when we stop his progress with a timeout during the 2022 season because his innings aren't quite where they're at. Therefore, take it a step further, if we're talking still about Rodon, then you need all the quality arms you need to be able to get in baseball now. They don't necessarily have to throw 200 innings anymore. But if you have six or seven quality arms, like the Tampa Rays have done over the past 4 or 5 years in piecing together very good teams, then you can be more stealth about, 80 innings, 100 innings, 110 innings, and still be sufficient if you have enough arms in your system and at hand to handle those extra innings. I mean, if we saw anything out of the World Series, it was that piecing together games are probably a part of the future for a lot of teams.
Yeah, and that's what the White Sox didn't get against the Astros. No starter went deeper than five. And I think when you look at what the secret of the World Series was, it was having depth of starting pitching, maybe not just the guys at the top of the rotation that we're going to focus on this offseason, or maybe we knew and know that the White Sox need as much as anything, Bruce, because let's look at it. They want to collect as many quality arms, proven arms as possible. And if Michael Kopech only threw 69 innings last year and they want to make a gradual ramp up next year, they're still going to need somebody. You can't get it done with five starters anymore. This isn't 1995 or even a decade ago, because it's all about winning. And that's why I think it was interesting to hear Rick Hahn, as good as this White Sox season was, sound like a guy who wasn't satisfied with the way it ended.
I've been asked this question, I think, just about every year in sort of the end of season assessment. I actually think it's usually Bruce who asks it. I tend to be binary about these things. You know, it's pass fail. We didn't win the final game of the postseason. So that we didn't meet our ultimate goal. So if you're looking for like my personal assessment, you know, we didn't reach the ultimate final goal. So how can we possibly be satisfied? That said, there's a lot of reason for hope going forward. There's a lot of reason for optimism going forward. We are, as an organization, we like the direction that this team is going. And this is what we've worked for, is to be in a position on an annual basis to have realistic World Series aspirations. And I think as we sit here on November 4th or 5th, whatever it is, we can realistically say that. Now, we obviously have work to do, not just because of free agency and not just because of some of the flaws that we saw on this roster over the course of the entire summer and early fall, but because there's always ways to get better. You've already heard from Tony about some of those that he and his staff are to work on over the course of the offseason and effort to improve us. And those of us down the hall, you know, have spent a great deal of time formulating plans to make this roster stronger than any way we can over the course of the next few months. So feel very good about where we sit, but that isn't inconsistent, in my opinion, with being unsatisfied with how things went last year.
Nice shout out for you, Bruce.
Yeah, I pay him big to do that once in a while, you know. David, when you listen to Rick here, you think about that rotation, and you know that Keuchel at age 36 is coming back off of a bad year with 1 year left on his contract. No other real left-handers to look at other than the development of Crochet, which he talked about might be in the role that Kopech was in this year, getting stretched out a little more and occasional spot starts. But if you don't bring back Rodon in some form, then you're looking at a rotation that might be basically right-handed.
And, yeah, you know, that's a great point.
If Keuchel can't post up and be the pitcher he was in the past, and, you know, knowing his work ethic, I know he'll work hard to come back. But, you know, if there's nothing left there, then you don't want a whole right-handed pitching staff. So they have to really think this out. I think they have to show their love to Rodon, but more so in a longer term contract rather than $18 million for 1 year.
That's what Bruce thinks. And what do you think? 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That is where we find Mike. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse.
Good morning, guys, and thank you again for your wonderful program. Bruce, my question to you is, given the possibility that the Sox might do something out of left field, not in left field, maybe which of their core five or six guys, the young kids who have been signed for long-term contracts, when and under what circumstances do you think they deal one of them, and who is it most likely to be?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Well, I really like what we saw out of Sheets. I certainly loved Vaughn's progress before he hurt his back the last 6 weeks of the season. It was really fun to watch a kid play the outfield that never played there and seamlessly move from left to right field and do a very good job. I just think that down the road, what you get the most back for? Well, what you get the most back for would be Eloy. Okay. I'm not proposing that you trade him.
Wow.
What I'm saying is, if you want to make a blockbuster deal where you bring in, you know, a top flight second baseman and a top flight other outfielder, then a name like that would have to be in the trade. You would have to really, really show that you are made of steel down below and make a trade like that to bring in some of the other areas. The White Sox are going to be looking for a second baseman. They traded their rookie and their top young second baseman Madrigal in the deal for Kimbrel. They're letting go Hernandez, who they traded for from the Indians. Right now it's Mendick and Garcia. It won't stay that way, right?
Yeah. Right.
So what I'm saying is you have some needs in other areas to fortify. I'm not saying please don't kill me on social media. I'm not saying that they should trade him because his upside is 40 to 50 home runs a year and 100 to 120 RBIs. We shouldn't forget what an outstanding hitter Jimenez is. But if you want to make a statement, you want to get some really good players back, that's the type of player you're going to have to give up.
I'm holding on to my superstar. I am going to sign Marcus Semien and give him a blank check to play second base, Bruce. And if I'm dangling anybody in my organization, maybe Yoki Cespedes, maybe somebody like that, but I am leaving my major league roster largely unaffected, and I'm not going to touch it because I want to win a World Series in 2022. And to do that, I think you've got to hold on to these guys and keep strengths a strength. But we can continue to discuss that because I love the possibilities that creates, possibly, if you're willing to do that. We have to talk about this Cub move, though, Bruce. We have to talk about Wade Miley when we come back, because somebody who I respect greatly wondered if the Cubs going after Wade Miley was just another version of them signing Jake Arrieta last year. Jake Part 2 is the way I think some sage veteran reporter posed it to me in a text. We'll wait and see. What do you think here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score? Inside the Clubhouse, we'll be back to talk Cubs after this.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Ground ball. Farmer. Wizardry from Wade Miley. A no-hitter. And baseball history.
Welcome back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm David Haw with Bruce Levine, talking baseball until 11 o'clock. That was a highlight from Wade Miley's no-hitter last May. Wade Miley won 12 games, Bruce, with the Cincinnati Reds. The Cubs claim the 34-year-old, who turns 35 next Saturday, off waivers. Pretty reasonable bargain, $10 million for a player who last year had a baseball reference, had a WAR of 6, and FanGraphs, it was 2.9. Pretty efficient pitcher in 2021, Bruce. Low-risk move for the Cubs. Sneaky good is what I called it in the first segment. What do you think?
Well, I like it a lot. There are a lot of reasons to like this trade, David, so let's go through them a little bit. Number one, the biggest weakness for the Chicago Cubs going into 2021, and it proved out to be that weakness all year long, was the fact that they had a staff of all right-handed pitchers. Right-handed pitchers that didn't throw very hard. And that turned out to be the Achilles heel for the Chicago Cubs all year long, as predicted, that they weren't good enough with starting pitching. So in Miley, you get a veteran, and you always concern yourself about the age, but if you look at the body of work for Miley, he's always been an innings eater. He's always been a guy that throws the ball extremely well. Obviously, threw a no-hitter last year, a very good ERA, especially if you consider, David, the ballpark that he pitches in, which is a home run haven in Cincinnati. A left-handed pitcher there against mostly right-handed lineups. I mean, this is a very good pull for them. And if you project it even further down the line, and he is with a team that is not necessarily in the hunt for the playoffs in August or in late July of 2022, he's a guy that's going to bring you back something that's really going to be pretty good for that last 2 months from a contending team. So all the way around, you know, kudos to Jed Hoyer and the front office for making this stealth move and being in the position of being the seventh team to be able to pick through waivers and be able to claim him off of the waiver wire.
Well, that's a bright spot from being so bad, is that you get the choice at the, near the top if you have a waiver claim. So good for Jed for doing that. And Wade Miley, exactly, was still good enough last year to throw that no-hitter, as we heard from our Bally Sports Ohio, that highlight coming in, Bruce. But I kind of hitted you. But how is this alike and how is this different from a year ago when the Cubs went out to another 30-something pitcher in Jake Arrieta, built up high expectations that were never met, maybe early but certainly not late, and that didn't go well? So what makes this experiment with a mid-30s guy different?
Well, there's no emotion in this. Okay, bringing back Jake Arrieta to me was an emotional feel-good. We're trading Yu Darvish. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We're bringing back your hero from 2015 and 16 and 17. We're bringing back Jake Arrieta. Well, the form of Jake Arrieta that was brought back looked pretty good for about the first four or five starts of the year. And after that, you know, he was pretty much lost. His stuff was gone. His ability to use his lower half in his delivery was gone. And you saw the end result where he was eventually released. In Miley, you don't have a guy coming off of injured years. You don't have a guy that has any emotional attachment or expectations of what he should be from the past. He's just a solid veteran left-handed pitcher that should automatically become, you know, ideally he's a four starter in a real good rotation. As we speak today, David, he's your number two starter behind Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, as 312 Texter points out, everyone threw a no-hitter last year, so it's no big deal that Wade Miley did as well. Alec Mills, one of those guys with a no-hitter on his resume, he probably pencils into the rotation going into spring training, Bruce Wright. And then you have a collection of guys like Marquez and Steele and Thompson. You don't quite know what to expect from them. In light of that uncertainty, Bruce, how aggressive do you think the Cubs will be in free agency, which begins next week, the GM meetings next week in San Diego, outside San Diego? How aggressive do you think they will be to try to supplement that rotation with other veterans like Miley?
Well, I'm not quite sure about that, but I know that this gives them a real leg up and a feel good about going to the GM meetings starting Monday and sitting down, knowing that you pieced together another important part of your rotation and you're going to be able to move forward and really haven't spent a lot of money or committed money for the future beyond 2021. So I can't think of a better move that the Cub front office made. Is he going to be a great pitcher for the Cubs? You know, we don't know that. We'll watch the results. But all indications are this solidifies them to go out and make a couple more moves to bring in some veteran pitchers. But veteran pitchers don't have to be 35. The trades that they might make or the free agents they might sign might be, you know, under age 30 and be able to be projected for more than just 1 year or two years.
Bruce, I know this is Chicago Sports Radio 670 Score, not Cincinnati Sports Radio, but what in the world are the Reds doing, and what does that say about the state of the division if they're going to lose Castellanos? We'll talk about him in the next segment, but they let Miley go, and he was very affordable and very productive for them. What direction does this signal? They made a trade with the Tigers, got rid of their catcher. Are they positioning themselves for something that this is just a payroll dump? What's going on in Cincy?
Yeah. Well, Nick Kroll has already gotten his marching orders, and it's pretty evident, if you watch it, that it's a dump salary, you know, because of the fact that Castellanos is moving on. That's $17 million committed for the next 2 years that is going to go away. Miley's $10 million. You're already saved $27 million off of next year's payroll. Now, that said, that doesn't mean that Cincinnati won't get active and bring back players and trades or free agency that make less. But from the veteran status of really good players like Castellanos, who should be high on the Cubs list, and Miley, they're moving away from the projected winning in 2022 to let's build a stronger base here, and let's be a little bit more savvy about how we spend our dollars.
And that's why on the first official weekend of this offseason, baseball just ended a few days ago with the Braves celebrating. I look at this from the Cubs' perspective, and you see a division. Boy, I mean, you got the Cardinals who have changes at the top with their manager. I know they're still the Cardinals, but they're changing managers. You've got the Brewers who are the Brewers, but what's going to happen with them every year? I just saw something that Josh Hader may be a guy on the trade block. You don't know what's going on with them. The Cubs have an opportunity here because if the Reds are going in one direction and the Pirates are still the Pirates, Bruce, can they be competitive enough? That's the question you have to continue to ask every time you have a personnel move or a trade that you consider if you're Jed Hoyer, don't you?
Yeah, I think you're right, David. This is a winnable division. You know, again, it took a monster end of the year for St. Louis to be able to show up at the end. Milwaukee is certainly the top team in the division. They have the best pitching. It's controllable, but their offense is really needs to be fortified. They lose a pitcher, they trade Hader. Things could change there. You look at Cincinnati, where they're at right now. So from all of that, you know, you look at this division here and you say, maybe the Cubs are not going to be the favorite going in. And you know, Milwaukee has to be because of what they did and what they've done. But, you know, some stealth moves here, and they can be, as Jed Hoyer said at the end of the year, a very competitive team for the playoffs in 2022.
We want to look at some potential stealth moves the Cubs and the White Sox could make next with our favorite new segment, Chicago Bound, here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I'm going to tell you something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm going to stay in this town. I'm going to live in this town.
What new star players may be joining the Cubs and White Sox in 2022? David and Bruce explore the free agent and trade market as the offseason takes shape. Will it be Max Scherzer putting up zeros at 35th and Bill Veeck Drive? Or Carlos Correa hitting long balls at Clark and Addison? You and the guys discuss possible offseason MLB moves and speculate who may be Chicago bound at 312-644-6767 on Inside the Clubhouse.
Welcome back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine, and you heard our new segment, Chicago Bound. Love that music, Bruce. Great idea. Last week we discussed Marcus Semien and Matt Chapman. This week we begin with the future of Nick Castellanos. Boy, did Nick Castellanos have a good year in 2021, a contract year for him. He opted out after hitting 34 home runs, Bruce, drove in 100. This is a player who the Northside fans know well. Everybody respects. The Sox fans remember him from the Tiger days, but he's a different player since then. What are the possibilities and what would be the price tag for Nick Castellanos for the Cubs or the White Sox, and which team makes most sense?
Well, you can make a good argument for both. The Cubs in particular make an awful lot of sense. The White Sox have some very strong right-handed hitting in their lineup. If they need to add, you know, maybe a left-handed bat would be the way to go. But nonetheless, Castellanos brings a tremendous amount of energy, a tremendous amount of enthusiasm, a tremendous amount of will to win, and a big bat that almost led the league in hitting this year is a doubles machine, as we remember from 2019 when in a season where he played 4 months for Detroit and two months for the Cubs, had 58 doubles. This guy is an OPS monster waiting there to join a good lineup or make a not-so-good lineup a little bit better. So he opts out of $34 million over the next 2 years, 2 years, $17 million per year, to jump into the marketplace now, and he will be sought after by more than just the Chicago Cubs or the Chicago White Sox. He'll probably have 10 or 12 teams that are interested in bringing him in. What's it worth, David? You know, he's probably going to get a four-year deal, I would say. You know, he's still young. He's only 29 years old right now as right. a free agent again for the second time. I say he gets a four-year with a fifth-year option somewhere between $22 and $25 million
a year. I think you're right. Right around the $100 million mark is where you're going to be talking about the neighborhood where Nick Castellanos will be living next 4 years. Is that worth it for the White Sox? Can the Cubs afford to go that direction? I think when Gordon Whitmire, a guy from NBCSports.Chicago.com, talked to him in September, he said it's up to the Ricketts. It's up to Mr. Ricketts to decide. Knowing the way the Cubs operate, Bruce, do you think that, and knowing what they know about Nick Castellanos, he was a good Cub. He fit in pretty well, I think, for the most part, unless there's things that we're not privy to. Do you think they would be aggressive knowing what they know and in the position that they're in?
You know, I just keep coming back to the comments from Tom Ricketts and from Jed Hoyer at the end of the year saying that we will be in that free agent market. We will be aggressive, but we will be intelligent about how we spend our money. I'm not quite sure I understand exactly what that means at this point. Intelligent meaning we're only going to give it to people that are of a right age, right temperament, the right makeup, the guy that fits into our situation where we think we need fortification. Look, the Cubs' outfield production over the last 3 or 4 years has been really disappointing and really in need of solidification. That's why they went out and got Castellanos in 2019 for those last couple months to try to compete and win. It didn't work out, but everything he did was loved by the front office, loved by ownership, and loved by the fan base. So this would be an extremely popular move that would also fall into the area of, at 29, that if you give the guy a 4-year or 5-year deal, you're probably going to get your money's worth. This is a pretty healthy guy that has a lot of slug, but just the energy and the leadership he showed when he came in 2019, there's a tremendous amount of feel-good left over for Cub Nation.
As for the Sox, I think their needs probably are greater at second base in the free agent market and the guys that you could potentially invest that kind of money in if you're willing to dig that deep into Jerry Reinsdorf's pocket to get a $100 million investment. Marcus Semien, maybe somebody else, maybe an infielder, maybe one of those shortstops if Tim Anderson wants to play second. I don't know what the possibilities are, Bruce, but I look at their outfield. I don't know that they need to spend $100 million on a guy who plays a position where they have a lot of strength. I know that Gavin Sheets and Andrew Vaughn, that combination necessarily doesn't excite everybody. But they're young players that you have drafted and developed, and maybe you want to see what they have, and you don't need to spend $100 million on a guy at this point because you have other needs that might be greater, maybe a top-of-the-rotation starter as well. So I think the Cubs maybe make more sense. They may be more desperate, more aggressive in pursuing Castellanos than the White Sox need to be.
Well, you're right. I mean, Castellanos is a below-average outfielder. He's a hustling outfielder, but he doesn't have much range. It's just below average. But, you know, stepping back to the Cubs for another minute, the point we left out is the DH. It's going to be there in the National League. And that makes him even more attractive able to bring in a defensive outfielder. And Castellanos maybe is your DH 30, 40, or 50 times. And as he ages, segues into that DH role where you have some feel good about and protection about the money that you spent on a long-term contract. So that's a new area for National League teams this year, being able to look at that DH and project it as a part of your future. I don't think – I'm sorry, David.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, the Castellanos thing will be continued to be discussed and speculated because he's out there and it's going to be one of the most sought-after free agents when free agency begins next week. And every Saturday, we want to talk about one free agent, maybe one guy via trade. Craig Kimbrell could be a guy the White Sox pick up the option and trade, as has been speculated. I think Bob Nightingale reported that. That has yet to happen. Rick Hahn didn't clarify that yesterday, Bruce. What do you expect to happen with Craig Kimbrell and who he might be traded to? What teams might want him? What are your thoughts there?
Well, it's an interesting move. I think you and I have talked about it before that it doesn't seem like the wisest move for the White Sox. Because if you're thinking of, you're going to pick up the it's pretty clear they're going to pick it up. What their mindset is as to whether they still think he can be a valuable part of a championship team and be a setup man to set up Hendricks. I don't know that. Bob Nightingale originally reported that they were going to pick up the $16 million option and then trade him. Okay. Trade him doesn't mean they're trading him tomorrow, David, or next week, or December 1st or January 1st. Hmm. Trade him might mean, well, wait till spring training where other teams are still looking for a closer or still looking or losing other closer candidates by injury, and then we'll be sitting here with him to be able to deal.
We call this Chicago bound because we talk about Chicago teams getting trade pieces or making deals. Could Craig Kimbrell conceivably be traded from one Chicago team to the other, just like he was in July? Could you see him returning to the Cubs? Because you know what? I don't know that they feel great about their closing situation, and he did have some success there.
You know, unless the Cubs feel that they're going to be a championship caliber team next year and they expect to be competitive but not maybe world champions, Kimbrell doesn't fit on a team like that, okay? Because he's going to be a free agent again after that season. So unless you trade for him and then you have a trade and sign where you feel, okay, he's got three more years left in him, we're going to be competitive to win a championship, this is our guy. I don't see him fitting in back with the Chicago Cubs. They made a very good trade for him. They picked up, their would-be leadoff man starting second baseman in Madrigal. They picked up a potential setup man or closer in Hoyer. So I think they'll cut their losses there and just move forward and say, hey, this is a good trade for us, so no need to bring him back.
That was one of many trades that Jed Hoyer made at the deadline. It's accumulating prospects that are now in the minor leagues. What do those minor leagues look at for both sides of town, Cubs and White Sox? We'll ask Jim Callis, the expert who works for MLB Pipeline, next here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus. With customizable tools and charts you can access across all your devices. Try our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/Trader Plus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.